Welcome to the Transform 2017 Virtual Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you one of the most amazing women in the world that has connected and helped so many people, from famous to people just like us, Ms. Elizabeth Bachman. Elizabeth, why don't you take it from here?
Thank you so much. Consider this thought. Good is the enemy of great. That's from Jim Collins, who wrote the book From Good to Great. And good for him that his title has become a buzzword, because people just say, oh yeah, going from good to great. That really shows how you've made an impact on the world, if people use the title of your book as a term of business. In any case, what I'm really glad to be here today. I want to really congratulate all of you who are listening, because this call is for those who understand that good enough isn't just good enough, just isn't good enough. You really want, if you're putting together a speech and you intend to get results from it, then it really makes sense to work on being great. Speaking in public helps establish you as an expert in your field. And for that matter, the more you're perceived as an expert, the more you're going to be asked to speak. So it behooves you to have a signature speech, to master a signature speech, especially a signature speech that sells, so that when they ask you to speak, you know what you've got to do. I'm Elizabeth Bachman. I'm an international opera director and a presentation skills trainer. And what I do is I help people master a signature speech that sells, because so many people have signature speeches and they say, okay, that's good enough. And then they go around to various networking events or chambers of commerce or telesummits. And they do their signature speech, and they maybe get one or two people who say, oh, that's interesting, I want to know more. But they're not, and they say, okay, that's good enough. But if you're really using speaking as part of your marketing plan, so I'm really speaking to those who use speaking as a tool in order to move their audiences to take action. If you're really doing that, then it makes sense, it's logical, and it's good practice to work on the techniques that make it better. And just good enough isn't good enough. I think about how much money people are leaving on the table. Say you're speaking to get people to buy your product or hire or use your service. Let's concentrate on that for today. And if you do that and you're okay with people saying, oh, that's interesting, that's nice, but not actually signing up, think how much money you're leaving on the table. And the real experts, the people who make their living by speaking, say the Robert Kiyosakis or the Tony Robbinses or people like that, they're always looking for that extra step, something, that little tweak that will improve their results. Now, I'm not saying get into the quest for perfection. You have to have balance in your life. Pay attention to the balance and beware of the trap of making the speech so perfect that you never actually go out and deliver it. That's going too far in the other direction. What I'm talking about today, and my intention today, is to give you some of the refinements that will take a good speech and make it a great speech. And these are the refinements that increase audience engagement. Because after all, if you're speaking to persuade and you need to get results by the end of it, you need to get a sale or to get somebody to do what you want them to do, then the more you can get people engaged and fired up, inspired and excited, the better. Last time I spoke about the basics of crafting a signature script, that sells. This time I'm talking about what do you do once you have the basics. And the reason why this is important is because this is what's going to get you from having one or two people sign up at the end of your speech to learn more, to find a strategy session or buy your Easy Yes product, and to having four or five. So I'd like to start with an exercise here. You're going to want to write this down, so get a pen and paper. And write down for a minute, what's the value of an average sale for you? What if you're speaking at a chamber of commerce and you make an offer for a sale or a product, or you get someone to sign up for your introductory program, or they're going to buy your introductory package. Write that down. And then on the next line, write down how many times you speak per month. And if you don't speak regularly, maybe how many times you speak per quarter. And just multiply that. That should be the number that you're making. Say your average, your Easy Yes product is $100 and you speak three times a month. So you're going to write down $300 a month because you're making one sale each time you speak. Now, what would that do? What would that be for you annually? So if it's $300 a month times 12 is $36,000 maybe. If you apply these techniques that I'm going to talk about today, and I'm going to give as many as I can in the time that we have, you could double that, triple that. What would it do for your business if you had two more people buy from you each time you spoke? So just look at your average sale per speech, say, and add two people to it, or two sales. Multiply that by the amount you have per month. And what would that do for your business? So say, for instance, instead of selling $100 each time you speak, what if you sold $300 each time you speak, and you speak three times a month? So that's $900 times 12. That's a nice increase. This is why it's important. And this way, it breaks my heart to see speakers leaving so much money on the table by settling for the basics. I also really applaud you today for being willing to go beyond the basics. These, again, are the tools that you want to do, that you want to use to increase your sales and get your audience excited. Your improvements could even mean improving your results, could even mean getting a hot referral or impressing somebody so much that they introduce you to someone influential, which opens up a whole new realm of possibilities. So my intention for today is to go beyond the basics, give you some tips for polishing your script that you can use right away. I promise before we're done, I'll tell you how to get more before you finish. So as you heard, I'm an international opera director and a presentation skills trainer. And I learned about always striving to improve from traveling the world, working with such luminaries as Luciano Pavarotti, Placido Domingo, and hundreds and hundreds. Yet, haven't you seen speakers who give their all and nobody moves to buy? Or they get compliments on their speech, but they haven't made any sales? Let's talk about some of the things that you can do to improve that. In my VIP program, Mastering a Signature Speech That Sells, we work on the script, the delivery, and on getting gigs, because how do you get the strategy for getting booked as a speaker? And they all have to work together. So you start, however, with the script. Now, last time I spoke on this summit, I talked about the basics of working on a script, how you put together, say, a good place to start. It's not the only place to start, but a good place to start is to have a five-point system, like the old five-point rule for writing an essay that you probably learned in high school English. I learned this from Mrs. Curtis in eighth grade. So thank you, Mrs. Curtis, wherever you are. And those are, go back to your, if you didn't listen to the last speech I did, the quick overview is, with your pen and paper, write down the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 vertically down the side of the page. Number 1 is your introduction. Number 5 is your conclusion with your call to action. Numbers 2, 3, and 4 are a teaching point. You could just say TPA. So you got teaching point A, teaching point B, teaching point C. Now, whenever I'm doing this, I also have a footer on the page. Every time I'm writing a script, I have a standard footer that has 9 different elements I want to include. I put together the bones of the speech, and then I go back through all of these 9 elements. It's sort of like creating a wonderful pasta sauce, and you start with onions, garlic, and tomatoes. Then you want to add salt and pepper and all the other spices that hopefully are going to make your people run to eat your pasta. And actually, if you're running an Italian restaurant, if you're in an Italian restaurant, you could just open a can of pureed tomatoes and dump them over some spaghetti, but you wouldn't have a lot of customers and it would be very boring. It's the refinements. Are you going to add basil this time or oregano? Are you going to do mushrooms or are you going to maybe add meatballs? Those are the refinements that make life interesting and make your speech delicious, the way it makes your pasta sauce delicious. So 3 of the 9 that I use are questions, learning styles, and pre-framing. So write those down. Questions, learning styles, and pre-framing. Questions. The first point is questions increase engagement. Haven't you noticed if somebody asks you a question, you're automatically primed to answer? It's pulling engagement out of your listeners. Have you had somebody ask you a question and you're ready to say yes or no? You automatically perk up. This is why people like, say, Tony Robbins uses questions all the time. And they can be subtle, couldn't they? You could have questions that end with a phrase, as I just did. You could ask a question, couldn't you? A rhetorical question. Or you could say, have you ever had a boring pasta sauce? And then have you ever had a delicious pasta sauce? What was the difference? It's going to make you think about things. So, have you ever listened to a boring speech? And have you ever listened to a great speech? Can you analyze what the difference is? Those of us who are in the business of training speakers so that they can master a signature speech, especially a signature speech that sells, we pay attention to how things are put together. Just the way a cook going into someone else's restaurant is going to taste that pasta sauce and identify the elements in it, the spices. So if you ask your audience questions, here's another refinement as a little bonus tip. If you're speaking live, ask them to raise their hand. So raise your hand if you've ever had a delicious pasta sauce. If you say, how many of you have ever had a delicious pasta sauce? Or how many of you have mastered a signature speech? How many of you have mastered a signature speech that sells? You're talking to the whole group. The refinement is, say, raise your hand if. Raise your hand if you've mastered a signature speech. Raise your hand if your signature speech sells. That makes it feel like you're talking to one person at a time. And then as you deliver it, you look at one person each time you do it. If you're on a telesummit, you're going to say how many of you, because you're obviously speaking to the group. There's a little bonus tip for you. Questions will increase engagement. And if you think about it, notice how you feel. Can you imagine how you're going to feel if somebody says, how it felt in actually the last couple of minutes when I was asking you questions? How did it feel? The difference between if I asked you a question or if I told you something. A friend of mine once listened to a recording of Tony Robbins, and as Tony Robbins was going into his sales offer, my friend counted 150 questions in 10 minutes. This is the sort of thing that takes some practice, but it's a great technique. The second thing I'd like to talk to you about is different learning styles, speaking to the different learning styles. You may have heard that there are visual learners, auditory learners, and kinesthetic learners. This is something they talk about in neuro-linguistic programming a lot. We all have all learning styles, but everybody leads with one. Have you noticed a visual learner who's going to be happiest watching a video to learn something? Did you know that auditory learners do better if they're listening to a recording and or listening to a phone call while they're doing something else with their hands? Kinesthetic learners are the people who understand something at a gut level, but will grasp it better if they do something physical. Are you writing this down? Write this down, because this is something that that is going to help you, help the kinesthetic part of you learn it better. If you're only speaking, the trap is when you are speaking, it's easiest to default to your own learning style. So visual learners tend to do a lot of slides and so forth. Auditory learners tend to do no slides. But if you're only speaking to your learning style, then you're leaving out 2/3 of the audience, and you're leaving so much money on the table. I really encourage you to think about doing the different learning styles. And if you're curious about how this is, if there's anybody who's unfamiliar with this concept, you can always contact me at elizabeth@elizabethbachman.com. I'll be happy to explain more what I'm talking about. Now, there are many, many other things that you can do. There's metaphors and storytelling and seeding and dealing with the elephant in the room and so forth. But my favorite technique is what I call pre-framing. This is also known as dealing with objections before they arise. Sometimes people call them dancing with objections and dissolving concerns. Here's another refinement that you can put into your speech. When you've got your basic outline there and you know what your teaching points are, you're going to want to use a story to illustrate each one. You might as well pick a story that's going to dissolve one of the objections that you know that you have. And do you know what the three main objections are? Most time people say, I don't have the money, I don't have the time, or that'll work for everybody else, but it won't work for me. I call that the success objection. Can I do it? Can this work for me? If you tell your story, you could tell a story that illustrates your point and dissolve an objection while you're at it. For instance, with the visual auditory, the visual auditory kinesthetic story I just told, I often tell the story of a client of mine, my client Tara, who was a graphic artist and had a presentation that had so many slides in it, it was overwhelming. What we did was we went through, we reduced the slides, we added elements where you didn't have to look at the slides, you had to say things out loud. Auditory people, you may know that auditory people understand things better if they listen and then repeat them. Say that to yourself. I learn well when I listen and repeat. How did that feel? My client Tara, when she reduced the number of visual items in her presentation and added auditory and kinesthetic items, had a huge increase in her sales. She sent me a letter saying, "Thank you, this is amazing, because normally I do get one or two people who sign up before I speak, but this time over half the room signed up to talk to me about whether I was going to, how I could build their website." That was what she was selling that day. So if you think about that, telling that story gives you an illustration. And I forgot to tell, Tara didn't know if this was going to be worth it. She said, I'm not making very much money. I don't know if I can invest in hiring you, Elizabeth. But I promised her that if she let me evaluate and work on her presentation, I knew it would get her better results. And so she found the money. She didn't have it. She actually borrowed the money to work with me and then was able to pay it back the first time she gave the new presentation. This is the value of having visual, auditory, and kinesthetic elements in your presentation. And that story I just told, I usually tell it in the context of the second point, That story I just told was also to dissolve the concern and to pre-frame the idea that it's worth hiring me to help you with your speech because you can make that money back the first time you give the new presentation if you do what I tell you. That's the sort of thing that you could use for pre-framing. I'm going to ask you for just a minute to jot down the biggest objection that you get when you're speaking. Just take a moment. Is it money? Is it the time it takes? Or do they think, that'll work for you, but not for me? Jot that down. And then after you listen to this, sit down and think about how could you tell a success story that would dissolve that concern, that would counter that objection before you've actually asked for the sale. That's the best part, is if you weave these stories in the body of your speech, use them as illustrations, they also subconsciously help the listener think, it's going to be okay, it's going to be safe to invest with this person, to hire this person, to buy this product. So those three are only three of the nine major themes that I use. We talked about asking questions, addressing the visual, auditory, and kinesthetic learning styles, and pre-framing your stories. Now, I know this is tough when you're in the middle of your speech. It's something that it's often hard to see from the inside. as the saying goes, you can't see the label if you're inside the bottle. So if there, so my offer for you today is, if you'd like more information about the refinements of your speech, about how to go from good to great, and maybe get that one or two extra sales every time you speak, then reach out to me. You can go to elizabethbachman.com and sign up for a strategy session, or you can just write to me, elizabeth@elizabethbachman.com. That's ElizabethBachman.com. I'm so delighted to be talking to you about this today. I usually don't get a chance to go this deep into the goodies of crafting a signature script that sells. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity. And I invite you to go out and be great.